This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
How do you buy your material or sewing goods? Would you buy material online? How do you do that? I'm Mary Guerin. This is The Conversation Hour. And yes, you will have heard the major retailer Lincraft has announced it's shutting its physical stores across Australia and New Zealand, moving entirely online. How do you choose material online? Have you already made that transition? Because Lincraft management is saying it's following consumer behaviour. So maybe you're part of that. Tell me how you do it. What does it mean for sewers and for the industry? Of course, there are some major outlets left, but what does the industry look like? What's it going to look like if indeed this is the way that trend is going? We're going to stitch all that together this hour, but I'd love to hear from you what you think. What are the experiences that people are going to be missing out on if they buy material online? I personally remember standing for hours going to the local fabric shop, looking at the big pattern books, heavy, taking them by the big tabs, going through all the materials. I would spend hours there every weekend. What are we losing if we lose physical material stores? And tell me what you think we might be losing. I want to hear from all of you. Your sewers out there. I know there are so many in the audience. I would love to hear from you. Also today, I have, you might have heard, nailed my colours to the mast today, and they are all blue, in case you missed it. The State of Origin 2 is in Melbourne tonight. That's New South Wales versus Queensland, Blues versus Maroons. Now, don't switch off. Whether you care about league or not, I want to have a conversation I think we can all be part of today. Every year, this series highlights what I believe is the unique personality that is Queensland. It always just seems to be a state of mind, not just a state of Australia, just a little bit different. Queenslanders just seem to love their state maybe a little bit more than others love theirs. They just don't seem to be able to let the Queensland identity go. Am I wrong? Am I slandering Queenslanders? Let me know. Am I just misled by perhaps what Maroon lovers are like? What's it like being a Queenslander in Victoria? If you are here from that great state, is it hard to live here with all this weather? All this culture, let me know. We are having a light-hearted, affectionate, loving look, of course, at the plight of Queenslanders here in Victoria. If you are here from Queensland, why did you move here? Is your heart always left behind? If there are Queenslanders in your life, do they always tell you about it? And why do we say Maroon anyway? We are going to be talking about that as well. Apparently that's just us in Australia, not even just in Queensland. Across the rest of the world, they say something different. 1300 222 774 is the number to call. 0437 774 774 to join me in conversation about how you choose fabric online, whether you're from Queensland. Also today, the return of the Bangarra Dance Theatre to Melbourne. But next, Lincraft has gone online only. What does this mean for sewers?
This is The Conversation Hour with Mary Guerin.
So that is the news this morning, that Lincraft is going to be shutting all of its physical stores. I want to hear from you. How do you buy your material? Have you gone online? Have you changed over the years? Did you lose anything? What do you think we might lose in that transition? 1300 222 774 is the number to call. Maybe tell me about the fabric shops of your youth. What does it mean? Did there used to be smaller shops before we had the big outlets like Lincraft anyway? Is that what we could or should be going to? 1300 222 774 is the number to call. Jai Marshall is fashion designer and fashion lecturer at Swinburne University and joins me now. Hi, Jai.
Hi, Mary.
Does this move surprise you from Lincraft?
No, I think the digitization of the global fashion industry is really upon us, and it's just kind of the starting point. I think we're going to see more and more fashion organizations go online. This year we saw some pattern making companies go online with the increase of PDF patterns and being able to download your own patterns. And we continue to see more and more fabric stores go online. And it's really just the digitization of the fashion industry, which Australia is slightly behind in the adoption of their fashion technology.
So, as you've said, this is a trend that you've observed. Lincraft is saying this is where the consumers are going. But I'm already seeing on text, and please call instead, 1300 222 774, how the people are saying you can't choose fabric online. What would you say?
Yeah, I think it's really difficult to source fabrics online. And if anything, the online stores generally would order a small sample before you would go out and order meters of fabric. It's so hard. Fashion and textiles is all about touching those textiles and understanding the drape and the colour and the feel. I think we've all ordered some fashion online once before and it's arrived and we thought it was going to look fabulous and we put it on the fabric felt disgusting. So I think it's really hard to do fabric sourcing online, and particularly in Australia, it's generally really hard to do fabric sourcing due to our kind of geographical location compared to the rest of the textile manufacturers.
What that means is that we can't get to feel the samples because people potentially in the regions can't get to see and compare the materials. Is that what you're meaning by that distance that we have?
That's correct. Once upon a time, Australia used to be a big hub of textile manufacturing. Mm. And we would have so many textile mills here in Australia, which would make it so much easier for us to import fabric and understand fabrics, where now a lot of our fabrics are imported into Australia, which makes it so much harder to get an understanding, particularly for those emerging fashion designers who are ordering large quantities of fabric and really taking a bit of a risk on what kind of fabric they're going to choose.
Mm. 1300 222 774. If you are a sewer, you'd like to join this conversation and tell me about the favourite fabric shops of your youth and what you think about ordering fabric online. Pam in Ringwood, what do you think?
Oh, well, I personally don't order fabric online. I much prefer to go in store and look and feel the quality and give the corner of the fabric a bit of a rub to see if it crinkles up badly.
Mm.
And look at the width of it as well. And is it a one-way design or not? And is it suitable for what I'm thinking of sewing?
So where do you go, Pam, when you're shopping for material?
Glen Huntley.
All right. And so it's a smaller shop?
Yes, and there's one in Lilydale I like to go to.
Mm-hmm. So maybe the Lincraft going down.
Sorry
for talking over you, Pam. I was saying, so maybe Lincraft's decision won't affect you that much.
No.
Okay.
No, we've got to drive a fair distance, most sewers, to get hold of reasonable fabric these days. But most of us like to feel it in person.
Yeah. Pam, thank you. Penelope in Williamstown, what do you think?
Look, I personally didn't shop at Lincraft. I shopped at two local businesses, which were in the western suburbs, and they've gone. Like the previous caller, it's a very tactile experience to actually go and feel the fabric. And then also get all the bibs and bobs. Shopping online for fabric is not a great experience. So I now shop at a few shops in Fitzroy, and then I drive over to Eltham Way. I've forgotten the suburb, but whatever. And that's a beautiful shop, and if I want to go there, that's a real treat.
So that's from Williamstown.
So it's not about the quality.
What's happening locally?
Well, those two businesses shut, and it may be because they may have been burnt out. I don't know. Maybe online competition's been too much for them.
Yeah, wow. And, I mean, Penelope, we're talking about that feeling of walking into a space where also you're getting the service, asking people, advice. Is that also what you think that you get from that experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So the shop that I'm referring to over Eltham Way, they actually have patterns made up, so you can actually look at them, feel them and size them up against your own body, and then actually talk to the people who have actually made those items of clothing. So it's really good to talk to other people who sew face to face.
Penelope, thank you so much for telling us about that. Jai Marshall has been listening on, fashion designer and fashion lecturer at Swinburne University. Jai, it goes to the community of sewers as well. This on text, you can't order material online. Lincraft have just buried themselves. Other people talking about Spotlight still being open. And I guess there are other big retailers as well. But tell us, what do you think about it as a business move then? Is Lincraft going to regret this, or is this just the way of the future?
I think over the past couple of years, we have started to see a bit of decline of customers going to Lincraft. We saw suppliers starting to kind of dwindle away in store. And I think this is really a survival pivot online. But I do think we will start to see more and more of this digitization of the fashion industry. But I do think, as the Texas and Collars have said, you know, it's such a part of the design process of going in, feeling the fabric, and a source of inspiration. So many of my ideas have been going to the fabric store and talking to the people in the store and the other people around the store and getting that inspiration. And I think, you know, currently the Australian Fashion Council are doing a national smart manufacturing feasibility study to understand, you know, where we could pop up some smart fashion hubs, which might have textile manufacturing on demand, which could be so great for so many of our crafters and sewers across Australia.
Is there any space left for those smaller mum and dad shops?
Absolutely. I think we still see a big hub of that in Fitzroy. So we've got a fabric store and drapers and super cheap fabric and Rathdown. So Fitzroy is this real great hub of textiles. I think with this culture of, you know, we've seen on TikTok and Instagram and more people taking up sewing, particularly since COVID, I think these smaller fabric stores, they have so many knowledgeable people in them as well. It's not just about buying the fabric, but it's actually about learning to sew and learning all those tips and tricks. I can guarantee if you have any issues sewing, you can go in and talk to a person in the fabric store and they'll have a solution for you. And I think that's part of that customer service.
There are quite a few texts coming in with the flavour of saying, look, Lincraft hasn't been delivering the service or even the fabrics that it used to, that it's been sort of changing its business model is the overall sense that I'm getting and going in this direction. What do you feel it means for people who have already moved on from those bigger stores, and where do they go to now, particularly as you were talking about people who might be in rural or regional Australia?
Yeah, I think one big benefit of the digitisation of the fashion industry is that it is becoming more accessible to people in rural and remote Australia. So no longer do you have to travel hours to get to a local fabric store, but you can use online services that are getting better and better each year in being able to deliver what a fabric might feel like.
How do they do that, Jai? Sorry for interrupting, but how do you do that online? Yeah.
I think, you know, videos are getting better and better. So there's a really great company online recently, SwatchOn, who have been doing some really great exercises of recording every fabric and showing how it might drape or feel. But it is, you know, at the end of the day, fashion is all about touching the fabric. So, you know, it is a bit of a hard medium through that digital space, but maybe something for someone to research into.
So many people saying, look, they can't do it. If they can't feel it and see how it falls, they won't buy it. Someone is also saying, look, go to op shops. You can find fabric there.
Absolutely. Last semester, my students did a collaboration with Burundara Council for Kylie and Danny Minogue Day, where they had to go around to all the local op shops and find fabrics to recreate a Kylie and Danny Minogue outfit. And they loved it so much. And it's so amazing how much fabric we already have on this planet. And I think being able to utilise your local op shop to upcycle, or even if it's, you know, I had one student take a big reel of curtains and turn it into a big ball dress. So I think using your local op shop's a great idea.
And Jai, just from a selfish point of view, I love to be able to take my daughter into fabric shops to sort of pass that on, because it is that visceral experience that I think will appeal to her rather than showing her a website. Do you fear that fewer people will make their own clothes because of this, or younger people won't be inspired to do this with this trend?
Yeah, I do think if we go completely digital, it is going to lose that craftsmanship. I think there's always been this big debate in Australia around how we continue to deliver the craftsmanship of fashion and get younger people into sewing. I recently visited a couple of factories this week as a part of this smart manufacturing study. And, you know, listening to so many of them talk about the struggle to find passionate machinists and sewists and fashion technologists, there are many fashion jobs out there. And it's really sad to see the passion for the craftsmanship of fashion kind of decline a little bit. But we are starting to see more craftier people start up, whether it be, you know, more men sewing or more women sewing. It is quite an interesting kind of domain where we have this interesting balance happening.
Kaz says, look, you can't see colours accurately on a screen. Really difficult to match a thread without having gone online to look at that. I can only imagine Kaz is right, Jai.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the whole experience is about going in store and picking a fabric and getting a thread and making sure it's all matching. And so many times, you know, I've gone into the fabric store with one idea and I end up stumbling across something completely different and it completely changes my idea. And I think that's so much a part of the design process. So much about fashion design is being inspired about your local environment, and being unable to step into that location, I think, can be really sad.
Kim in Eaglemont, what did you want to say?
Oh, hi. I'm calling from the Fabric Restore in Eaglemont, which is a for-purpose social enterprise. Basically, it's a really great op shop for sewing people. So it has donated fabrics and haberdashery from people who are downsizing or reducing their stash or deceased estates. It's fabulous. And you get all sorts of wonderful things that you don't see in the big box shops or in other places. And it's generally really, really fabulous quality.
I bet. What's it called again, Kim?
It's called the Fabric Restore, and they measure their impact in the metres of fabric that are rehomed.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It's great. And the whole concept of the shop is to rehome fabric so that no fabric goes to landfill.
And do you get inspired, Kim? Do you sew up a storm?
I try really hard not to add to the stash, but, you know, it's really hard not to.
Kim, thank you. So that's the Fabric Restore, Jai. Maybe that's going to be the creative aspect of moving on from what we knew and loved.
Absolutely, yeah. More circular fashion initiatives is fantastic. We recently saw eBay Australia announce a really great initiative for some of Australia's best circular fashion funds and grant opportunities, and it was really great to see some Australians on the international stage of doing some really great circular fashion things, such as, yeah, resourcing fabrics and recycling fabrics, which is so much of the future.
Mm. Meg in Kyneton, what do you think? Hi, Meg.
Oh, hi there.
Hi. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting. I was just saying before, I think that it's more about Linkcraft, actually, and what they're offering and what they're not offering, their customer base, than it actually does about the industry. There are so many people I know who have either taken up sewing, particularly since COVID, or have been sewing for years and are creating this, you know, they have independent stores. I think that's becoming really, really impressive. The offering of independent stores, the advent of social media and the people finding their own communities. And so, you know, I know young people in their early 20s, I know people in their 50s and older who are really exploding, actually, in terms of sewing. I never knew it's such a big thing, you know, but there are so many people creatively creating this.
That's terrific to hear.
And not just in fashion. Yeah, yeah. So I think it says more about Linkcraft's lack of offering than it does about an industry as a whole.
Meg, you have given us the silver lining for this discussion. Thank you. Jai, that's a really nice note to end on, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think it just goes down to that customer service and the experience of being able to step into a local store and get those years of craftsmanship knowledge rather than just being treated like a customer.
Jai, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Mary.
Jai Marshall is fashion designer and lecturer at Swinburne University. Someone is saying, look, Linkcraft closing is devastating. I'm an avid seamstress. You need to be able to touch it. Someone, Deb, says, I'm in Warragul. Our bricks and mortar fabric shops closed years ago and I now regularly buy online. There are some online shops that are fantastic. So it's a brave new world. I'd love to continue the conversation with all you avid sewers out there. 1300 222 774 is the number to call. We will continue that conversation. Also, if you're a Queenslander living in Victoria, I want to hear about the sad plight that is being a Queenslander in Victoria. Of course, it's all tongue-in-cheek. This is ahead of the State of Origin game, rugby league game in at the MCG. Every year, the Queensland personality outs itself. I want to talk about that. Also, it is the one time of year a lot of us are familiar with the colour called maroon. Why do we say maroon? That's next.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
So, the New South Wales Queensland Rugby League game, if you're not familiar with it, is Blues versus Maroons. And apparently, this is something all to ourselves in Australia. Before we get on to talking with two resident Queenslanders here from the newsroom who are going to join me very, very soon, where you can tell me if you have a Queenslander in your life, what are they like? Do they never let you forget about it? 1300 222 774 if you're a Queenslander in Victoria. What's it like for you? 1300 222 774. First to talk Maroons versus Maroons, Kate Burridge is Professor of Linguistics at Monash University. Hi, Kate.
Good morning.
You know what? I'm so deep into this that I didn't even know Maroons did apply to the colour anywhere.
Well, look, there's so much variation out there, as you've probably gathered too, but it is a mysterious one, I should add, and it's something that's peculiar to Australia that you have these two pronunciations, maroon and maroon.
So how?
How, yes. Well, you know, the origin is quite straightforward. It came into English, you know, along with a whole lot of French words for colours and many other words too, but it was originally from Italian. So it was the word for chestnut. So the original pronunciation, we know this quite clearly because we have people writing about pronunciation in the 16th and 17th centuries, which is when the word came in. It would have been maroon.
Right.
So much like those other words we swiped from French cartoon, balloon, saloon, pantaloon, etc. They're all pronounced with that way. So why have we got maroon? That's the puzzle.
So is there a dominant theory or do we just blame the way our mouths work in Australia?
You know, there are a lot of puzzles like this, and often words do split in pronunciations when you get to pronunciation. So I'm thinking of, I don't know, words like valour and valour, they're originally the same word. They just had different pronunciations. And then we attach different meanings to them. Yeah. In this case, there was a very famous phonetician called Fiddleholtz, memorably, and he once said, frequent words do exceptional things, and particularly names. And so you could imagine that the name, and often being repeated, starts doing its own thing. So you get this maroon pronunciation, which is actually closer to the Italian original.
Oh, so maybe it's the Italians who landed in Australia. They told
us. It could have been, you know, yeah, indeed a sort of dialect form that was kicking around. The closest we have to it are the pairs macaroon and macaroni. They are ultimately the same word. Macaroni came in from Italian for the, you know, the pasta. And then macaroon came in from French, although it's the same word historically, and it has that characteristic pronunciation.
Different meanings as well.
That's right. Yes, exactly. So, you know, I think for some people, it'd be interesting what you know, what your little survey sort of says when you talk to people. But I think some people have maroon for the football team and maroon for the colour.
Well, indeed, I'd love to hear from people. 1300 222 774. Do you say maroon, or does the colour never enter the lexicon until you're watching the State of Origin? 1300 222 774. Never before, potentially, if we had a colour that's unique to one particular code of sport, potentially, Kate.
Oh, that's interesting idea. Yeah, I don't know that many people sort of, well, you know, some people may not even connect the two, just like we no longer connect, I don't know, ticket and etiquette and fancy and fantasy. These were all simply the one word that we, you know, gave different pronunciations to, and then we stop associating them altogether.
Do we associate it with Strine or, dare I say, being Bogan? I have Terry on text saying Barry Humphries used to mock anyone who said Maroon.
He would.
He would.
Well, I think, you know, we've got our own very distinctive pronunciation there. And as I said, it is closer to the Italian original. It did mean chestnut, by the way. So usually our colour terms come from something concrete. And this was, so it was originally chestnut coloured.
Chestnut. Let's see whether the Queensland Rugby League team would call themselves chestnuts after this. Kate, thank you for guiding us through that.
That's my pleasure. Thank you.
Kate Burridge is Professor of Linguistics at Monash. Do you say maroon or maroon? Are you a Queenslander stranded in Victoria? Tell me, is Queensland a state of mind? Queensland is just a little bit different. We're going to be getting into that very soon with two ABC Newsroom legends who both hail from Queensland. How will they talk about it? That's coming up next.
Could somebody please help me? I'm a little bit confused. When selectors choose for Queensland, could you tell me what map they used? Where you're born and where you come from, surely that's your origin. So could somebody please tell me what state these towns are in? Where is Sydney?
That's in Queensland.
Suva, Fiji?
That's in Queensland.
Where is Bowraville?
That's in Queensland. Queensland's everywhere.
Yes, producer Richard found that. That is, of course, mocking the well-known part of Queensland rugby league tradition where they steal people and call them being from the origin of Queensland. Looking stunned now in front of me about that intro is Mel Brown and also Tim Callanan, both from the newsroom. You know them, their lovely mellifluous voices on broadcast and online as well. Thanks for being here, Queenslanders.
Thanks, Mary. Can I just say, first of all, when I was a kid growing up in Queensland, blowing up balloons and pulling on my pantaloons, we always said maroon.
Your maroon pantaloons. Fantastic. Look, everyone, I want to know, if you're a Queenslander, what's it like living in Victoria, especially at this time of year, State of Origin visits? If you know a Queenslander, do they never let you forget about it? 1300 222 774. Of course, it's an affectionate look at the Queenslanders amongst us. Just to let everybody know, when I asked Mel to come and talk about this, she said she has drafted an argument for why Queensland is better than the rest of Australia. So, Mel, I thought it was going to be a controversial argument. You've just proven my point.
I'm all in facts. I deal with facts. I'm a news journalist. I'll open this argument with a personal story and then deliver the facts. When I was in the regions in Queensland working for the ABC, we would once a year organise a big get-together with all the regional journos. We'd drive 7 hours for most of us, 8 hours. Mm. One would drive from Mount Isa down to Longreach and across central Queensland, all to the Whitsundays, just for a weekend to get together. So if that doesn't tell you the type of people that we were in Queensland,
I'd travel that far to go to the Whitsundays.
In Melbourne, they don't cross the river to see their friends. So that's the type of people I come from.
Okay.
Now, all right. I'm not sure that's a good... Is that a good thing? Are you saying that as a... positive?
We would invite your wife, Tim, and you would not come. So that's all we'll say about this.
And yet when we moved to Victoria, my wife was, how far is it from Melbourne to... I'm like, it's always 2 hours to anywhere in Victoria. It's 2 hours.
Whereas in Queensland, I know, it's a lot bigger. Yeah. Tim, you know, this is a big time of year where personalities are big. When it's a Queenslander, there's a lot riding on it. You know, tomorrow morning, if you win or even you lose, you're expected just to lean into your colleague's face and just scream, Queenslander. How do you feel with this mantle, this pressure on top of you?
Like many Victorians, I think I discovered that the State of Origin was being held in Melbourne this evening. This is how I loved the State of Origin when I was a kid. I was a huge fan in the 80s and 90s when it was like the golden era of State of Origin, you know. Yeah, Wally Lewis. I remember New South Wales had a guy called Noel Cleal. Do you remember Noel Cleal?
Yes.
He looked like a kind of a lumberjack crossbred with a Yeti or something. it was like these people from New South Wales, they're not human. They're weird. They're huge. Like, they look like they're either going to grab the ball or eat it. You know, that was State of Origin to us. You know, this this sense that these other people coming from this strange, mysterious place across the border were coming to...
But then the Maroons became the Behemoths.
Yeah.
And the trauma began for the Blues.
I guess at all time they were just huge men smashing each other in the face, and that was straight state of origin to me, you know. Now it's become so professional, the game is so polished, it's about fitness, it's about skill, whereas back then it was just about, as someone described to me, fat people falling on top of each other.
So you're not as excited. Are you the one Queenslander in Victoria who's not excited about
it? My excitement has ebbed away over the years for state of origin and rugby league. If Queensland wins, I'd be like, yeah, great. If we lose, I don't care really.
Okay, I want to hear from you, 1300 222 774, what you're hearing, in your own life about Queenslanders having just that little bit more sense of pride potentially in their state, identity. They can't quite get away from that identity no matter how long they are here in Victoria. Mel Brown, I feel that describes you to a T. Do you agree with this, that maybe Queenslanders just invest themselves so much in their state, whereas others don't? I can't imagine wandering around saying, I'm New South Welsh, I'm Victorian.
You have to look at where we come from. Like, the way of life up there is just so different to down here. I can't see a patch of sand down here and go, oh, that'd be a good place for a surf club. Because I don't know if many people in Victoria know, but Queensland's got 1,700 beaches. Many of them have their own surf club. And members of the public can go in. You don't have to be a surf lifesaver. You go in and you can get a steak, a beer under $30, and you've got million-dollar views from every table.
A beer in a tiny little glass.
Well, you can't get a big glass because it gets too hot before
exactly.
you finish
yeah.
the beer.
True.
But then also look what else we've got. We've got so many whales up there that you get sick of seeing them. I was on a holiday in the Whitsundays with my sister. There were so many mums bringing their little babies through, teaching them how to breach. So we'd be lying in bed. You could see the whales from your bed. Don't have to lift your head off the pillow. And okay. We'd go, another whale. Go back to our book. Oh, there's another whale. Then Bluey. Bluey is set in Queensland.
Oh.
Come on.
Okay, you can't claim a fictional character.
More facts, more facts.
She's Queensland reaching for the facts.
Queensland gave you the Bowen Mango, Lemington's, Super Rooster Chips and Margot Robbie, case closed.
Wow.
Okay, what about all the culture down here? Is that just, you know, is that just not on
Queensland
the
board? Has the big pineapple. Thank you very much.
We had World Expo 88.
Exactly.
The biggest cultural event of the 80s.
It doesn't get any more cultural than that, does it? I was trying to explain to my kids the other day about the big pineapple and how it's a giant fruit, and the king came and with his wife and they rode around in a giant
cane train.
Nut train, and they looked at me as if I'd gone insane. And then I kind of thought, is that what it's like actually being in Queensland? Are you slightly insane, but in a great way?
So, Tim, I'm gathering from you, you're not quite throwing on the maroon, although you are wearing something close to it today, and you're not as loud and proud as Queenslander. Are you a bit of an outsider then?
I'd say I haven't lived in Queensland for 17 years, I think. I'd say I don't describe myself as a proud Queenslander. I love visiting Queensland. I wouldn't ever live there, I don't think. Mel is the absolute opposite. She would,
in a heartbeat.
There could be a crocodile-infested swamp somewhere in Queensland. She would be there in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But for all Queensland's faults, it's an amazing place. Like the beaches, the variety of rainforest,
sure,
the outback.
Sure, I mean, there's, okay. I mean, I invited this in, didn't
what
I?
Have you got in New South Wales? Like a bridge and an opera house?
That, yeah, I'm not pro-New South Wales. I'm just saying that, you know, this...
You're wearing a blue scarf.
I am. Well, of course I am tonight. Absolutely. It's just a sort of state of mind, as I say, that I find is quite unique. I've got a friend who said when she first travelled overseas, so she's in her early 20s, and she was asked, where do you come from? And without any, you know, sense of irony or thinking about it twice, she said Queensland. She didn't say Australia. She said Queensland. Basically,
the real Australia.
As a final question, Mel, I mean, do you think, as I suspect, that Queensland should just secede?
Oh, absolutely. And we should charge you to cross that border.
I think if you ask most Queenslanders, they would say they already have. There's already a very clear political line there that
Well, go Blues. Let's cut off the mics now, everybody. And thank you so much to Mel Brown and Tim Callanan for joining us in that great state against state, mate against mate
go
debate.
Maroons and Maroons.
Yeah, that's two against one. Go Blues. Thank you. And, of course, you can listen to The State of Origin on ABC. Go to the Listen app for that. Let's round out this chat before we get to talk about Bangarra Dance Theatre making a wonderful return to Melbourne this week. That is coming up next. But let's listen to some Queensland greats. I'll be generous enough to play the Go-Betweens.
I recall a schoolboy coming home through fields of cane to a house of tin and timber, and in the sky a rain of falling cinders. From time to time the waste, memory waste.
The Go-Betweens with Cattle and Kane. I was born in Queensland, says this texter, and could never go back. I lived in Western Queensland. I've lived here in Victoria for 45 years longer. So am I still a Queenslander? Even though this texter's dad played rugby in the 50s, 60s and 70s. So there you go. And Kate in the Basin says, not a Queenslander, but my husband barracks for them because they're not New South Wales. Yes, I know that's what a lot of people in Victoria think. Keep that conversation going if you would like. But also coming up next, I'm really happy to be having a conversation about the Bangarra Dance Theatre making its return to Melbourne as of tomorrow.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is the Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Well, as we know, Bangarra Dance Theatre has spent more than three decades bringing First Nations stories, culture, connection, and just wonderful works to country, to Australian stages. And its latest production, Sheltering, is a triple bill. It looks both backwards and forwards. It comes to Melbourne tomorrow and is here until the 27th of June. And it revisits She-Oak. That's one of Frances Ring's most acclaimed works. And I'm delighted to say that Frances is with me now. She's the Merning Woman, also artistic director and co-CEO of Bangarra. And also just to let First Nations listeners know that in this conversation, we will be talking about people who have passed as well. Frances, thank you so much for coming in and joining me in the studio.
All good to be here, Mary. Thanks for having me.
Talk to me about Sheltering. As I said, it's three works, three separate stories, as I understand. Can you tell us what we'll be seeing?
Yeah. So Sheltering, I wanted this to be, I mean, the title kind of reflects, you know, this place of gathering, this place of protection, of connection, and also intergenerational conversations. So I wanted this to be a meeting place of artists to bring their generational energy, spirit, and expressions to this program. It's a triple bill, and we start with a work that actually came out of our Dance Clan program, which is our dancer incubator program, where our dancers get to explore making their own works and what it's like to become a choreographer, to work with a team and see a work created from the ground up. So it's choreographed by Glory Tui Daniel, who is an alumni dancer for Bangarra. She's created a work titled Keeping Grounded, and it's a really magical work. It's about, you know, the forces of country and how that is such strong medicine for your body to recover, to repair, and how, you know, she did all this research into this period in the past where we shifted from like leather shoes to rubber-soled shoes. Mm. And you know, post that, you know, there was an increase in, you know, ailments and illnesses, and how that connection to the country and the positive and negative charges through the body was not getting received. And so, yeah, it's this incredible, I mean, we all know about, you know, when you're on country, you feel this renewed energy and, you know, it's healing. And yeah, she's done all this this work to create this incredible 25-minute work that really showcases the next generation of Bangarra, you know, creative and cultural leadership.
That's so interesting. You talked about generational energy, and so that's what you're talking about, yeah, that next generation.
That next generation,
tell
that's
me
right.
About the theatre at the moment, the makeup then of that youthful energy and the older group as well, the older energy.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I think, you know, when I started in this role as artistic director and co-CEO, in 2023, I really wanted to lean into what had been those moments of transformation in my career. I spent, you know, 12 years as a dancer with the company, and then, you know, I had the opportunity to also create my first work through the Dance Clan program. And that's really where my horizons shifted. That's where, you know, being on the other side of, you know, of directing dancers, of like working with a team, of being able to kind of vision and trust your voice and your vision and the way that you want to tell stories, you know, really kind of harnessing that and using that to kind of set my further aspirational goals that really had everything to do with where I am today. Leadership is something that we know is important to nurture in our young generation. If they can't see that, they can't become that. And that's a fact.
So that's also, you're talking about you embodying that
that's
leadership.
That's right. And leaning into that to kind of create opportunity for the next generation. So my vision for the company is about how I care for the legacy. Stephen Page, Mananjali Yugambeh-Mann has 32 years of leadership, and big shoes that I need to step in. But also I have a vision. I have created 9-10 works for the company. And, you know, it was about how I care for the legacy, but also more importantly, how I sustain the next generation coming forward, coming into the company of creative and cultural leaders by giving them opportunity. There are hundreds of First Nations stories out there. There are dancers coming through who have their own way of wanting to express those stories, and I'm going to give them an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about your dancers in a second. You're listening to Frances Rings, who's artistic director, co-CEO of Bangarra, of course, and a choreographer, started as a dancer, all these things. Frances, you're talking about those big shoes, you know, ironically, shoes to fill. How was that as an internal journey for you to trust your vision, to take that in this circumstance? Was that always coming through when you were a dancer as well, or did that require something special to think about that when you were given the role?
It's a very complicated process. Succession, you know, there's no playbook for it really, especially for somebody who has been in the role for so long, whose, you know, energy is so entwined, their vision, their aesthetic, the way they move, the way they tell stories. So really, I knew that it would take, you know, a lot of hard work, of dedication and time as well, because people have to get used to a new voice leading the company. So you have to build that trust, you know, and you start off, with really for me, it was about getting the team and the dancers on board. in believing in my vision and what I wanted to bring in the company.
Was
once you've
hard?
Got that, you know, it takes a while, you know, trust and, you know, and vision and it's a measure of all these tiny little steps that you do each day. And also, you know, learning from like, oh, well, that didn't work. Maybe I need to try this. And, you know, leaning on mentors, trusting my gut, but also I know what I'm doing. I've been doing this for a long time. And, you know, I've worked nationally and internationally with companies all over Australia.
Mm.
So.
Oh, there's no doubt you had that.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. It's just like, how do I bring everybody else on board? Yeah. And you know, everyone was ready. Everyone wanted this. And, you know, it's, you know, you also just have to kind of block out the noise and just go, I'm looking forward. And, you know, this might, you know, disrupt the waters, but it's okay. They'll get used to it and they'll come on board and trust my vision. And, yeah, you have to believe in your vision, trust your gut and just, you know, set your eyes on the horizon.
We're talking about the latest production from Bangarra Dance Theatre, Sheltering. I'm speaking with Frances Rings on The Conversation Hour, 774 ABC Melbourne and Victoria. Can you talk to me a bit more about She Oak?
Yeah.
That's, you have choreographed that before and this is a sort of a restaging of it. Can you share what that piece explores and what you are doing in this production?
Yeah, She Oak was a work that was created 11 years ago, can you believe? The Prime Minister was Tony Abbott. And, you know, it was an incredibly troubling time for people and communities. And, you know, I actually found my research book and I looked back at it and I had all of these clippings and, you know, and ideas for exploration. But I think, you know, we at Bangarra, we use our platform to be able to give voice to communities and give voice to, you know, what is affecting First Nations people, to give insight into our experiences, to affect change in doing so. So, you know, it is, it was a work that the incredible composer David Page, brother of Stephen Page, created this I don't know, it feels like this energy and this, it had the tension of our frustrations as a people, but also it just had this built-in like energy that propelled you forward and that gave you voice. And I think that that's one of the things that's most iconic about this work is the incredible score. You know, there's a lot of social issues that are explored in this.
So what was it like revisiting it? Because I guess you're talking about a snapshot in time 11
that's
years
right.
ago
yeah.
and comparing it to now.
That's right. Well, that's the thing is about how do we reflect back and how do we ask ourselves as a people and as a community and society, 11 years ago, have we changed? Have we gone forward? Have we listened to First Nations people? Are we doing everything that we can to lift First Nations people, to increase, you know, employment, to improve health conditions, to lower incarceration, to, you know, education, like all of those things that the Closing the Gap report highlights that are the incredible inequalities between First Nations and non-First Nations people. We have to look at that evidence. We have to, you know, and respond to that. So, you know, that was really important for us. I feel like She Oak, in a lot of ways, it feels like a template. And this might sound strange to your listeners, but it feels like a work that is a template or like a guideline for a new generation to come in, to reflect back and go, well, this is what is affecting my generation currently. And this is the energy and the physical response that I'm going to put into it. And, you know, they do that. It's a physically very full-on work, but there's a lot of spirit in there. There's a lot of passion. And, yeah, I think it's a great balance in the program. And one thing that we didn't speak about that sits in between the live works
yes.
is actually a film. Oh. We have a six-minute film called Brown Boys.
Yes.
And it's created by Daniel Mateo, who is Gomeroi Tongan man, and he's created this film. And this also came out of the Dance Clan program. He created it with our Bangarra videographer, Cass Mortimer Ipa. It's called Brown Boys, and it really explores – he wrote it when he was 14 – and
wow.
he is a poet. He's a dancer with Bangarra, but on the other side to that is another form of expression that he's really passionate about, and that's words and poetry. So he turned this into a dance film, and it's so special and unique and powerful and just visually gorgeous. And yeah. It sits in between these works. I think there's a bit of everything in this program for all of our for all of our audiences and communities to see. It's the past, it's the present, it's old expressions, it's new expressions.
Yeah.
At the heart of that is identity, it's pride and resilience.
We're talking about the Sheltering production here in Melbourne from tomorrow till the 27th of June from Bangarra. I know it's probably impossible to pick out a few and maybe you don't want to do it, but who are some of the dancers at Bangarra that you're particularly excited about at the moment? Can you share some of their stories?
I could get into big trouble for this.
Sorry. Okay, I'm not going to make her choose her favourite. I'm not saying that, but clearly you are excited about this.
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited because, you know, there's a big risk when you're responsible for programming, for curating, a work and a main stage program that travels across the country to some of our biggest stages.
And internationally. I believe you're travelling to Venice next month. You're going to be honoured internationally.
Yeah. That's a separate program, but I'll get to that.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
But you know, there's new voices here that people haven't seen, and I'm asking our audiences to buy a ticket to come and see these new voices. See them early in their career because they will come back and they will continue to grow, and you want to be the ones to say, oh, I saw their first work and that was incredible, and how much they've grown. And, you know, we grow because we invest in the next generation, because we lift those people up and we stand on the shoulders of those that came before us.
Terry says, I've seen every season of Bangarra over the last 30 years in Melbourne and Geelong. I'm looking forward to seeing them again on Tuesday night.
So amazing.
It does, yeah, go to what you're talking about. If you see them and you're then part of the story as you keep seeing them. Really quickly, we're running out of time, but what is this thing about Venice?
Oh, yeah. So earlier this year, we won this small award. It's the Golden Lion Award.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so epic. I mean, we could not believe that that we received this. It's an international award that recognises, it's usually given to individuals, to choreographers, and we're the first company globally, worldwide, to have received this award.
Congrats.
It's so incredible, and it's such a testament to the incredible, powerful work that Bangarra does. For over 37 years, we've been giving insight into our people's experiences and creating change by using our platform to do that.
And now Melbourne has the chance to see it. This is Sheltering. It's on Wurundjeri Country at the Arts Centre from tomorrow night till the 27th of June. Frances Rings, thank you so much for joining me in conversation today.
Thank you, Mary.
That's Frances Rings, who, of course, is everything. Artistic Director, co-CEO of Bangarra as well. Join me tomorrow at Mill Park Library, if you can come along, as Bridget has been there and Mornings has been there. It's my chance tomorrow. I've heard a lot about Mill Park Library. I'd love to hear from you and hear your stories. Also, just join me on the wireless if you can't make it from there, on the ABC Listen app as well. Talk then.